This is Eric Allen from Creatosphere, and this podcast is about the basics of digital asset management. I had the chance to Skype chat with Henrik de Geer. He's a digital asset management professional and author of the blog Another Damn Blog, and that's at anotherdamnblog.com. And essentially, the first question I had is about a digital asset management implementation phase. And, of course, the first question is, you know, what's the first step a company can take? But beyond that, I want to ask you, when a company is in that position and taking that first step, what is the most common mistakes that companies make when they step into this process for the first time?
Well, there's several common mistakes. One is not doing the research ahead of time, of both internally and externally. Internally, it should come first, where you identify what your true business needs are and what your true use cases are, and you document them. And most organizations do not do that. They have zero documentation or very little documentation across the board of who the users are, what the use cases will be, what the needs will be for a DAM. Why do you need a DAM? What is the DAM going to do for you, and how are you going to fit that in the process? And they skip that process because, first of all, they don't document. That's the common issue. They don't document what they've done in the past or what they plan on doing in the intermediate, because there's going to be a in-between phase during the implementation, and then what they envision in the future with a DAM, with advisement from the vendor and or consultants as far as what DAM should be able to do for them in a business sense and in the use case sense. So that's the most common, is not documenting and not doing use cases and workflows, basically documenting their workflows to know, you know, how do we handle assets today or files today, and how are we going to document and use files to assets tomorrow? And the differentiation I make between files and assets is a file is just, you know, I have my Windows or my Mac open, and I just see a folder full of assets that I may have created or acquired, and they're just file names. And those file names may mean something or absolutely nothing to originally, possibly the person that originally created it. The also common misconception is, oh, well, we're going to treat digital assets just like paper, or we're going to take the archivist point of view, the non-digital archivist point of view, and implement that to digital world, where we're going to have we originally had a 6-digit number to account for everything that we ever had, and we have 10 million assets, and we're going to continue using 6 digits.
Okay.
So you already see the complexity there, that 6 digits and 10 million assets isn't going to work.
Right. Okay. What about use case? I often find that, to me it's obvious and to you it's obvious. I often find that simple concept is a barrier. How would you baby step people through developing proper use cases, user stories, essentially?
Mm-hmm. Sure. What I suggest is doing interviews of the stakeholders, as well as the true users, the people who actually are in the trenches doing the work, and the stakeholders as far as what their requirements are, so that you document all these on paper or by email or electronically, so that it can be all culminated and filed through, preferably in a consistent manner, so that you interview the people who are actually doing the work. And you find out what their issues are, what their business needs are, that are not being met. You know where the holes are, and that's where the prior DAM knowledge comes into play, because they may not know what metadata can do for them. They may not know what DAM at all could do for them, or why they even need a DAM. But you can see where the holes, where the gaps are, and that's where you document the use cases. You literally whiteboard it. You know, okay, step one, what do you do when you're requested to create or acquire an asset for you know, project X or purpose X, what do you do? And then you walk it through, you know, who's requesting it, who's creating it, or who's acquiring it, or who's who's designing it, who's going to deliver, how are you going to deliver it? And you can see all those who, what, where, when, why, how processes and find out how that's going to get done step by step. And then you see, okay, so what happens in this nuance here where there's a gap here? Why is there a big gap in the delivery? Well, we just hand it over and throw it over a wall and somebody else handles it. Well, who's that over the wall person? It's like, oh, I don't know. I never met him. So and then you can see, okay, can we streamline this? There may be massive, wheelbarrows of money being burned in certain workflows. There may be redundancies very often there are because typically prior to DAM and what I ask on a general purpose generally what I ask is do you know can you find all the assets you created in the five created or acquired in the last 5 years? Usually no hands come up. How about 2 years? No. How about 1 year? And then maybe one hand will come up in at a DAM conference where I ask this question. And typically I'll ask, so do you have a DAM for that one person who raised their hand? It's like, yeah. And it's like, okay, and that's why, right? And it's like, yeah, that's the only reason why. Otherwise, that person may know what they created or acquired in the last 5 years, but they may not know what their neighbor did. And that's the whole idea behind DAM is you share all these assets across the board because you work for the same organization. Yeah, I know this may turn on some light bulbs, but they're not your assets. They're your organization's assets, unless they're contractually someone else's. And then, do you know what rights you have to reuse that asset? Well, typically no, unless it's buried in some filing cabinet somewhere. So that information should travel with the asset. And that slowly turns on some light bulbs that, all these things can get done with DAM, but it doesn't get done overnight. And the adoption takes a while because it's new, it's different, it's change, change management across the board. And you start with baby steps. You start with a pilot. You start with one department or one group of people where you want these people to understand how this will change their workflow. You walk them through. You have to train them. You have to document it because even if you give them, an hour or a day's training, I mean, it doesn't mean they're going to remember it tomorrow. So you document it and you give screenshots if necessary. You walk them through. You give them bullet points. Okay, do you have this? Do you have checklists of how, what needs to get done, where this is supposed to come from, whose responsibility is what? So you have accountability. So it's not like, oh, it was somebody else's job. Oh, it's somebody else's job. And then where does the accountability fall? Who's responsible for what? All those things are things that you need to be accounted for.
Well, with that process of implementation, is creating a taxonomy and metadata schema part of that? Or is that something you do even before implementation?
Yes, I would strongly recommend doing it before implementation because you need to know what information you have today. And that may be minimal and may be voluminous. And then what information do you want to carry over from that information that you may have today? And what information do you want to capture going forward? And how far do you want to go backwards? If you want to go backwards, some people choose not to go backwards. And so you have to draw that line in the sand. It was like, today we're going to start using this metadata schema. We're going to start capturing this information about this asset, these assets, these types of assets, whether it's audio, video, text, graphics, photos, whatever they happen to be. What information do you need to know about it? Do you need to know who created it? Do you need to know where it came from? Do you need to know what rights you have to it? Do you need to know what credit is required? Do you need to know the size or how long it is or who's in it without having to view the entire video or photograph or audio file? All those things can be captured. Do you need to know if you have releases for all these people? All those things can be captured. But when you end up with what you could capture versus what you really want to capture, some organizations choose to have like 400 fields of metadata, which is unrealistic because no one's going to fill in 400 fields of metadata and no one's going to reference 400 fields of metadata in the real world. So it's going to take you way too long to fill them in. So I actually had a poll actually on my blog as far as how many fields of metadata do you really use? I have the results on there, so you can take a look at it. And it's usually not too big because it has to be realistic enough that you can capture it on a preferably per asset or per shoot or per whatever voluminous basis. So you can gang capture and all these things, like, oh, all these photos are from this cruise ship that we shot over the Caribbean. And so we don't have to look for those photos again and again and again and again. Or this is from a advertising shoot that we did for this with this personality. And you capture all that, and you can add up the information to all those images, and then slight tweaks between them. This is from a tight shot, or this is a very wide shot, or whatever. And all those things can be captured, but it's a matter of knowing what you can capture, how you're going to capture it, what format it's going to be in, because also on my blog, I said, oh, well, there's metadata standards, right? So somebody actually documented recently, I believe from the University of Indiana, somebody documented 105 different metadata standards. And there's actually more that were not even captured that are quite popular, such as EXIF and IPTC and a few others, and PLUS. So there's several others, but so without having to use all of them, which ones matter to you? Are you in the finance industry? Are you in the medical industry? Are you in industry? I'm sorry, factories where you're producing things? Are you in the service industry? Are you doing photos? Are you doing video? Are you doing audio? All those have different metadata schemas that are possible, and different metadata formats, meaning that are transferable and that can travel with the asset sometimes. Preferably. But definitely, when you see the asset in the dam, you should be able to see all the information next to it by clicking, say, one button, if even that. So you have that information.
If you're staring at a C-level executive who's trying to grapple with implementing this, and they want to know simply what's the difference between taxonomy and metadata, and why should I care about both? What would you say?
So metadata is important because it's just information about the files, right? It tells you a whole variety of things. The taxonomy is the nuances within those fields. It can be so you can say, what, how do you want to break that down? So instead of somebody calling us something different every single time, you have a firm way of documenting. Okay, this is what we're going to call these things, and you break it down. There was actually several individuals. There's actually a book out right now called The Accidental Taxonomist, which talks about that to a degree. And there are several taxonomists that are well known out there, and they're on the they're traveling around to talk about these things. Because it's important to know the taxonomy, build a taxonomy so that you don't rename the same thing over and over again. Is it a phone or is it an iPhone? Is it a cup or is it a liquid container? Is it a whiteboard, a blackboard, or a writing instrument? Or is it a pen, a pencil, an ink cartridge? Do you name the brand? Do you name the model, or do you name the carrier, the phone carrier? There's the taxonomy is basically the breakdown of how you want to use that information so that it is standardized and then it is continually used so you can search based on it without having to dive deep into creating more words to describe the same thing. Now, granted, the taxonomy will grow and will change because things do change. There's no fighting that one because it will always change, and you just have to keep up with it, unless your organization never changes, and then you won't last very long.
No, great. And then I know we're having you at our Digital Asset Management Conference in September in New York. What do you got planned for us in September?
So I'm going to be moderating a panel discussion with several individuals, including Dan McGraw, on the phases of DAM. What are the phases of DAM? So including implementation and what that involves, and are they really phases? And we'll have several other speakers talk about how they implement it recently. So we'll have somebody who's recently implementing a DAM in their organization, I believe in the video space. We may also have a vendor speak into that respect as far as their perspective. So we'll have multiple perspective on the same topic. So we'll have fresh perspectives that recently did it. We'll have somebody who does it on a regular basis for many different organizations, and we'll of course entertain questions from the audience. So I really look forward to that.
Awesome. Well, we'll see you in September, and I really appreciate your time today.
Thank you.